Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, on the surface, it sounds great. Now we have to execute it in such a way where it is. We'll find out in the next hour what you think. Paul Keels this half hour, play-by-play voice, Ohio State football, basketball. Final half hour, Stanley Jackson, BTN. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Fly ball well hit to right center field. It is way back, and it is gone, a home run. Yasmani Grandal, a two-run shot, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead.
Charlie Steiner with the call on the Dodgers radio network as Yasmani Grandal homers. Gee, you wonder if the Blue Jays Indians are getting that inferiority complex on at 4 o'clock again today. Cubs and Dodgers, prime time. Oh, my goodness. That's our play-by-play call of the day. Let's now bring in, if I were to cast a play, or I needed someone to play the voice of God, I would turn in this direction to the great one himself, Paul Keels. Great one, I welcome you.
Oh, wise one, how are we today?
Doing well. I think we went through the same routine Monday night.
Yeah, to continue on Saturday, too.
It'll continue on Saturday as well. Well, glad you're feeling well. That's great. You know, teams get tested in all sorts of ways. What impressed you about how Ohio State handled Saturday night's test?
The fact that, you know, in a tough environment, as you know, Steve, they were able to come from 10 down at the half and really not have any kind of momentum, and the fact that Wisconsin was going to have the ball to start the third quarter. But they were able to do just what they needed to do. You know, I think lost in maybe some of this is how good Wisconsin played and just how good a team they are, especially on defense. And now their offense seemed to have played better than they had in their most recent games. But, you know, Ohio State just found a way to do what they needed to do, and a lot of that's attributed to JT Barrett with the situations he's been in, how they were able to keep him calm and move forward, and, you know, how defensively they were able to make the plays late in the game and the overtime that they needed to make.
When I watch Barrett, and then in combination, usually with Mike Weber, what's impressed me is Weber will be a lead blocker for him. How has he developed into such a strong blocker out of that running back spot?
You know, Steve, what's happened in recent years with what first Carlos Hyde did and then what Ezekiel Elliott did after him is they set a new standard for blocking for running backs at Ohio State. So what Mike Weber learned as a redshirt player last year, that you've got to be able to excel without the football to have the opportunity to carry the football. And, you know, Ezekiel Elliott took it to a completely different level. So I think that that's something that Weber learned, something he's put into play, something that in the summer helped him get the leg up on being the starting tailback. And not only with his blocking when Barrett's running the ball, but when you see him run the ball, him being right. Mike Weber, he's north and south. He's very decisive. There's not a lot of catting around out there. He just, you know, goes straight forward. And I think I read something in the game notes prior to last Saturday. He had only had two plays for negative yards. So it's just that mentality that's kind of been set.
Yeah, and he does have that mentality. Barrett, though, last year, when Cardale Jones was running this thing, and then really Barrett's breakout game that got him back to the front was the Penn State game last year. The maturity that he showed throughout that, what did that do to endear him respect-wise to his teammates?
You know what? I think, Steve, it was that, but also the year before when he had that great 2014 season and then busted his ankle in the Michigan game and how he handled the three postseason games and right to the national championship when he was not playing. That might have done more because here's a guy that, yeah, you know, finished fifth in the Heisman voting that year. couldn't play in any of those three preseason games, but still was the same supportive teammate that he had been when he was out there taking all of the snaps. And you're right, last year when they finally turned it over to him, we really saw a difference, because he and Cardale were different kinds of quarterbacks. They kind of had to run different type of offenses. And what you're seeing now is, as you said, maturity, experience, just being calm and cool out there. And he's, you know, starting to exhibit some of the things that Troy Smith showed, and that's just having the influence on other players to make them better players.
What has it meant also to the offense that on a really young offensive line, the two veterans play side by side in Pat Elflein and Billy Price?
And that's been huge, Steve. And I think that was something that, you know, we all knew when Pat decided he was going to come back and play his senior year, it was with the idea to move to center, you know, which might be where he'll make money next year. And you may see Billy Price do the same thing the following year.
Right.
But that's been big. The, you know, the other guys that are playing on the offensive line were guys that got backup reps last year and all of that. But, you know, this has been a group, an offensive line group, that it probably started before Urban Meyer got here. But since he's been here, he's really driven home the point that, excuse me, any team that's going to be good on offense, they have to be an offensive line-oriented football team. And a lot of that falls to Ed Warner, who was the line coach before bringing in Greg Studrawa for this year. And Billy Price and Pat Elflein have been living, breathing, large examples of that.
They sure have. Now, defensively, I think a lot of people feel that the strength of this team is the linebacking unit. And you know what Jack Ham thinks of Raekwon McMillan. What kind of leader has he been? And then give me an idea what Baker's athleticism has added to the outside.
Well, Raekwon has been an incredible leader. And I think both you and Jack made the comment last year, he's maybe the most consistent linebacker that, yep, you see play. And this year you've not seen him make as many of the highlight, real flashy type of plays, but he's always in position. And even if he doesn't make the tackle, he seems to have an influence on where the play is going. The Jerome Baker story has been a great one. You know, this is a kid that really turned a lot of heads late in the season last year, playing on special teams. You know, and unfortunately, Dante Booker gets hurt in the first game of the season and hasn't been able to get back on the field, and Baker has just stolen the show. He's got great quickness for a linebacker. He seems to have a great knack for where the play is going to be. You know, we saw him return that touchdown at Oklahoma, interception for a touchdown. That really showed you a lot of his athletic ability. And then throw in Chris Worley, who's been probably coming off his best game of the year and has been another steady player out there. So I think that linebacking group with Luke Fickell coaching him along is I don't know that you're going to sit there and say that there's one of those that fits in the mold of the great Ohio State linebackers, but I think as a group, they've played very, very well.
And the second, and now obviously the pressure up front's really helped, but I mean, I think Conley and Lewis and Reed might be the three best corners in the league, and Conley's really good. Latimer was the nickel last year, wasn't it? And then he's got three picks now.
Yeah, and he was a guy, Steve, that last year, we kept hearing the coaches moan and groan that they were just upset for him that he couldn't stay on the field and couldn't stay healthy. But, you know, Lattimore has really held up on that other side, and I think you've seen Denzel Ward as a third corner has given him great rotation. But the guy that's maybe stolen the show is Malik Hooker at safety. You know, a kid that, you know, from your state there who didn't play high school football until his junior year. He was apparently an outstanding basketball player. And again, he earned a lot of bones late in the season last year on special teams. And what he's done at safety and what he and those others as a group in that secondary have done is just, it's really made you turn your head, because, you know, that was where they lost, you know, Eli Apple, Von Bell, Tyvus Powell. And that was an area that everybody was highly concerned about. But we found out week one that was a group they were going to make their presence known in games.
Yeah, and the other part up front, Lewis is obviously really good, and I've always been a big Hubbard guy. What has Nick Bosa added as a kid in there? You know, everybody talks about Joey, but what's Nick done?
Nick has been, now remember, Nick missed most of his senior year last year with a knee injury, but, you know, he wears the same number as Joey. It's taken us a few weeks to get out of the habit of calling him Joey on the air, and his teammates for that matter too, because they say a lot of the mannerisms are the same. They now feel like there was a little bit of a pitch count. You know, they were concerned about how many reps they were going to give him coming off a knee injury, but that seems to be gone now. He's, you know, they occasionally play what they call their rushman package, where they put four defensive ends out there. Sam Hubbard, Nick Bosa can be part of that, Tyquan Lewis. And the guy that's really come on lately is Jalen Holmes,
right,
who plays behind Lewis. And, you know, that group on that last play and sacking Hornibrook at the end of overtime last Saturday really showed their stuff. And Steve, this goes all the way back to when John Cooper was here and Jim Haycock was the defensive line coach. They've strived to get a rotation of eight guys. And what's been a pleasant surprise this year, you know, they lost two guys before this before the season started. They lost Darius Slade, who'd had a lot of reps on the line, and then they lost Tracy Sprinkle in the first game. But that's opened the door for guys like Draymond Jones, Robert Landers, who's an undersized guy who's just a little ball of hate. He gets under the offensive lineman and disrupts them. And so that group has really, and no surprise to you all, has really seized what Larry Johnson has coached him to do. Right. And have continued to be the typical disruptive type of defensive line that you're accustomed to seeing at Ohio State.
No question. How great a weapon is Cameron Johnston?
Well, you know, he could have maybe sued for lack of support for a few weeks because he wasn't playing.
Right.
This kid as a punter has been outstanding. He has the Ohio State record for number of punts down inside the 20.
Right.
He just seems to really come up big in big games. I'm trying to think. It wasn't Oklahoma. It might have been Rutgers. He didn't even punt.
Right.
You know, he really helps flip the field. And he would be the first to tell you, and Urban Meyer talks about it a lot, they've benefited from great gunners on the outside. Devin Smith, who was an outstanding receiver, was a kid that really probably helped himself make some NFL dollars by the way he covered punts. They've got guys doing that now, you know, backup receivers like James Clark. That are getting down there and they're helping him. And that was a big factor in the Indiana game. They were very concerned about Mitchell Page and what he could do, how he had, you know, returned one against Michigan State. But Cameron Johnston, this is a kid from Australia. They had not seen punt in person. They recruited him off videotape. And, you know, even though they've got a freshman from Cincinnati that's redshirting this year, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep looking at what's going on in Australia with punters.
In fact, the guru of Australian punters is going to be here for the game. So he's going to come in.
Is that so? Good.
Yeah, yes, will be. One final question. I know you find this hard to believe, but number one, they play day games here, and they do have, you know, games where you just come as whatever you want to dress up that day. For you, you're always here. It's night, and it's a whiteout. You've been in a lot of great atmospheres, including an awesome one last week. What have you always thought about this one when you come in?
Oh, it's right up there with all of them. You know, we had a chance to see Oklahoma a few weeks
ago.
Yeah. You know, I'd been there some years ago for an old Mutual broadcast, but and that's a great setting, too. But, you know, I think Penn State, one of the things you really like, and I know they do play night games. I think the last time that Terrell Pryor played there for Ohio State, it was a 3:30 game.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's late enough in the year where the trees are changing and it feels like football weather. You know, that's kind of what you always anticipate with an Ohio State-Penn State game. You know, the atmosphere, the thing I really love about that there is it's with what they've done with the stadium, and they've done it with a few others, and Wisconsin is a great example, how they've kept the old and the new. You know, they've updated the suites and the things like that, but they've kept the old character, and that's one of the things that I've always loved about that. And just how, you know, what is it they say, that on game day, State College is, or the stadium is the second biggest city in the state. So, I mean, that's one of the things, even, you know, when you come in following an opposing team. But it's an atmosphere that really is right up there with any of the best that you'll see anyplace else.
Always a pleasure, my friend. We will talk Saturday. I look forward to it, as always.
Likewise. My pleasure. See you then.
Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football and basketball. Next half hour, Stanley Jackson, BTN. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. By the way, how is Wally the Soup Pip feeling these days?
Back to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I wonder if that was driven by the recent Frelazzo performances.
Pressed into action earlier than first thought or first planned.
Wally the Soup Pip. Yes. I think I'll take, some time off.
Yeah, confirmation from the other end of the building. Yep, he'll be back in the building tomorrow, so look forward to seeing them.
So, in other words, the vast majority of people are out tomorrow? Something out of nowhere, blue flu? What? I don't feel so good.
I'll let you know when I get here tomorrow morning if the parking lot's a little emptier than normal.
Even you're showing up late. Wait till we do that poll at the end of the year. That's going to be, I think it's going to be interesting. Our on-air poll. Should Kevin be allowed to return to the Shikellamy broadcast? I think it's got all the earmarks of... It's like a Drudge post-debate poll. You can vote as often as you want. I just want to make sure the Pipster's doing all right. That's his new nickname, the Pipster. The Indians have jumped out to a 1-0 lead on the Blue Jays. Wow. How about that? So got it done early here in this, jumping out to a 1-0 lead now. They've got Merritt pitching today. Ryan Merritt, the rookie. Trying to get through the first inning here. It looks like he's out to a good start. And Lindor scored the run. He's had a great series, hitting .313 in the series. So, yeah.
Yeah, Cubs and Dodgers back on the field tonight. Cubs bats have been quiet last night.
Yeah. What happened was Napoli doubled and Lindor went to third, and then there was a throwing error and Lindor scored. And as I mentioned, how do the Indians and Blue Jays fans feel about the fact that the Cubs and Dodgers, and you're in the afternoon again? How come the Dodgers don't play in the afternoon? How come the Cubs don't? No. Keep throwing this series on in the afternoon at 4 o'clock. So, Marco Estrada, by the way, is pitching today for the Jays. So, yeah.
Everybody Loves Raymond, that was supposed to be on at this time on TBS, will not be seen.
Again.
Again.
This is the really good one, too.
The one where Ray's parents show up.
That's all of them. Well, this is the whiteout thing is really fun. There's no question about that. Guido came up with the idea. Guido D'Elia was a great idea. And you got to get people to buy into it. And what's been great is that from day one, people bought into it. And you walk in there and you see all this sea of white everywhere. And it's remarkable. And it's remarkable to see how everybody embraces it, gets into it, how loud they are during it.
2005 whiteout when Tomahawk got that sack at the end of the game. I don't think I've ever heard the stadium roar that loud before.
Jack said to me at one point during a commercial break, he says, because the press box is rocking, he says, are we structurally safe here? And I said, I'm an announcer, not an engineer. I have no idea.
See that building down the street? That's the engineering department.
So. I said, that's exactly what I said to him. I'm an announcer, not an engineer. I don't know. I said, I'm just trying to ride it out.
There's the physical plan over there.
I mean, I know you expect me to have a lot of answers, but this isn't one of them. I don't know.
Must thought you'd have a direct connect there.
No. So this will be, look, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Yeah. I think what the commercial is, urban legend, survived a scare, do the Bucks stop here, series history. Yeah, show some great moments in the history. Penn State's improving offense. I think this is all part of their big commercial. And the prediction, of course, is going to be, what, well, hey, they say 80, yeah, was it? I always love they put percentages on. But the percentages you're going to win based on their unique factors. And as you know, I pay attention to none of them. I don't pay attention to any of them. People ask me about, how much I do pay attention to, and not much. I mean, I sit down, I watch my own tape, I make my own evaluation, I run a bunch of things by Jack, Jack runs a bunch of things by me, I watch practice, I watch more tape, I take a look at analytics to see if there's any hints in the tape I should be looking at. I kind of make up my own mind. I don't want to be clouded and jaded by what other people think. Not that I know more than they do, but if I'm going to give out a stupid opinion, it might as well be mine.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. All right, time now for our sports bozo of the day. As usual, multiple candidates at this point. And Dez Bryant injured his hand in a kitchen mishap. Minor knee injury is keeping him from catching balls at practice. Meanwhile, he was cooking at home, adding carrots to his soup. And he cut his hand, cut his fingers.
Like, what is this? Goodness sake. You can buy Progresso. They come in the soup. It's unbelievable.
Or hire a chef.
You have money. You can do it.
I think he's up to five times now as our sports bozo. I'm losing track here.
It's such an easy target. All right. Stanley Jackson, BTN, now joins us. Great to have you with us. If you have a young football team, I've always felt if you're young, it's critical to be old in certain spots. Quarterback, center, maybe with a veteran guard next to him, middle linebacker, a safety, and a lockdown corner. Now, Ohio State has four of those five. They don't have the safety. So how much has that helped in the development of a young football team that they're veteran in all the communication spots?
Oh, yeah, that was tremendous. I mean, I think you're dead on. If you could select the guys coming back from an inexperienced team, it would be those positions for a number of reasons. One, usually the information, right, is spread from those points. The center talks to the offensive line. The quarterback obviously talks to everybody. It's the middle linebacker who gets everybody lined up. And then having a lockdown corner allows you to always take away obviously the best receiver on any team that you're playing. And I think it might be an argument to who's playing best at corner right now, because Lattimore has been fantastic for Ohio State. But having those guys come back and lead the charge, I think is significant for this team. And you mentioned it. I mean, going to Wisconsin, Paul Chris had 2 weeks to prepare. They ran an odd front, something they only run 5% of the time prior to playing Ohio State. So the changes they made were significant. Their offense looked a lot better. So the fact that the Buckeyes came out of that one with a win, I think, talks a lot about the character of this team. If you look at the last 10 years, there have been three places that are voted or viewed as the toughest places to play in the country when you're traveling. One is Ohio State. Two and three is Oklahoma and Wisconsin. So the fact that Ohio State has had those two teams on their schedule this year is significant that they came out of both of them with W's.
Yeah, and Oklahoma, they couldn't have played any better. And Wisconsin, I think they couldn't have played any guttier. Fair enough.
Yeah, that is fair. There's some parts of the game in Wisconsin where obviously they were sloppy penalties. I mean, even Coach Meyer got a 15-yard penalty, but you're going to have that. I mean, any good football team, you got to sort of find a way to win certain games when things aren't clicking. And I felt like they were able to figure that out. And it was very similar to 2 years ago when Penn State had them on the ropes in Happy Valley, and JT Barrett figured it out in the fourth quarter in overtime, a way to win that game. So sometimes you got to figure out how to do those things.
Penn State, after the Michigan game, bounced right back, won in overtime, found a way to win against Minnesota, then played well against Maryland. What have you seen in the last two games out of Penn State?
Well, I really think it starts with Trace McSorley. I mean, I love what they're doing with him the last 2 weeks. And the amazing thing about his play and his numbers, for the first 4 weeks, he led the conference in passing. I mean, so you graduate from Christian Hackenberg, a guy you expected to lead the conference in passing. You have the 12th-ranked dual-threat quarterback in the nation come in a couple years ago, and then he's the guy that's leading. But the zone read changes how any defense has to play Penn State, and Trace has been reading it phenomenally as of late. It allows a new run lane for Saquon Barkley, something he hasn't had in his career at Penn State. And when you get that going, he gets 200 yards rushing, and now this offense is dangerous. We know about the threats you have on the edge. Godwin is as good as anybody in the country. And so when Trace plays at a high level, it changes things with his offense, and it helps the offensive line. Because now the rush point's always different, and they're not always rushing a guy standing in one position. And you are running the zone read, so now five of my linemen can block four defensive linemen as I leave the end free, and I can trust Trace to read it properly. So the significant change has been that zone read. I wish they had employed that against Michigan a little more, but he's the catalyst behind their offensive success. And then on the other side, I mean, you got to take your hat off to this coaching staff, the way they've been able to navigate the injuries from the linebacker position, and they've gotten better the last 2 weeks. I mean, playing Minnesota and Maryland, two teams that had been rushing for over 300 yards and shutting both of those teams down running the football was significant. So this team is improving every week. I think Coach Franklin is starting to get the best out of them.
When you quarterbacked in big-time atmospheres, when you had to go out of Columbus and you go into a big-time atmosphere, how did you want to handle it as a quarterback?
Quick 14. You want to go out and you want to score a quick 14 points,
right,
and you want the fans to sit on their hands. That's the best way to handle it. I'll never forget going into Happy Valley in 1994. So in 93, obviously, Penn State joined the conference, came to Columbus, and we were able to figure it out and win in the fourth quarter. And then in 1994, we went on the road. First time Ohio State had been there in years. And before you knew it, I mean, Kijana Carter and the gang were on top of us. The final score was 64-14, and the crowd was a significant factor, particularly on the offensive side. We couldn't communicate. So any quarterback wants to go in and score 14 quick points, take the crowd out of it, put the pressure back on the home team. And so both offense and defense early in the game has to play well. And for Ohio State, that's going to be a problem because they have yet to start fast in one game this season.
Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska are the undefeateds within the conference right now. But it's also been a conference which has seen, obviously, Wisconsin beat LSU and a couple of other things. Is there greater depth in the conference than some people realize?
I think there is. And it's unfortunate that a team like Wisconsin had to play Michigan and Ohio State so early in the year. You know, combined 14-point loss to two top four teams. I think they're a really good team. Nebraska's looked better. Now, Michigan State is struggling now, but Penn State is playing a lot better. Indiana's playing a lot better. Northwestern has seemed to figure it out. And I think if you compare the Big Ten right now to every other conference, then you'll see a lot more depth down the line. I mean, including the Southeastern Conference, where after Alabama, I'm not sure anybody is really good. I mean, Texas A&M is undefeated, and Tennessee has just lost their last two games. and the Big 12, obviously, who's there? Baylor's the only undefeated team you have there. The Pac-12 isn't any good. They only got Washington left. So I don't think it's even close when you look at all the conferences across the country as to who has the most depth top to bottom for their football team.
Interesting, because the Big 12 just went through their big, we're not going to expand this week. Did you feel in some ways that about how sloppy that was handled by that conference as compared to how smoothly, for example, the Big Ten's handled the expansion, the SEC has, and so forth?
Oh, man, they've done a terrible job. I think you're not saying it hard enough. I mean, listen, first you lose. You know, it's like the Big Ten losing Michigan State or Wisconsin, right, or Ohio State or Michigan. You can't lose Nebraska. I mean, that was a staple for your conference. But once Nebraska left, then you lose Missouri and Texas A&M. So that's their first problem, losing quality programs and then replacing them with, you know, B programs in the same state. And then, you know, you kind of get boxed out of a national championship opportunity because you don't have a championship game. And now you won't expand because there's really no good team out there to bring in, maybe Houston or Cincinnati. And so, yeah, I think they're really screwing this thing up, and they're going to have to figure it out. Now, part of it is money. I think, you know, the networks have come to them and basically said, look, if you don't expand, which kind of helps us in a way, we'll give you some money. So, but big picture, if they really want to play in a national championship game, they're going to have to expand and add a couple teams. They're going to have to add a Big 12 championship game. I know I think it's scheduled for a couple of years from now, but yeah, their leadership is a far cry from Big 10 leadership right now and how they're handling this.
What has this being on BTN, how much has that helped you stay close to a game that you really love? Because, I mean, the media thing, you handle it really, really well, but what's it done for you to keep you involved in the game?
Oh, it's been tremendous because it forces you to watch every school. I mean, you know, for the first 8 years of my career in broadcasting, has been local radio, and it's just covering Ohio State. So I knew Ohio State well, and then you know each program as they come in. But now I get an opportunity to cover every program. When I'm in Chicago on Saturdays, you know, we've got seven TVs in there, so you get to watch every game. And it's difficult for anybody to do that at home. None of us have seven televisions. So it's been great. And then, you know, being able to be around the coaches and the athletic directors from all these different programs, hanging out with guys like Howard, and Coach DiNardo and Coach Mason definitely has changed my perspective on college football and how you see it. I've had the opportunity to call some games, so it's a dream job. It's been great for the last 4 years, and it has really expanded my knowledge and my appreciation of college football.
All right, specifically, what are a couple things where you did change your perspective after talking with them and being around them that maybe you hadn't thought of before as to when you were playing?
Ohio State football is the center of the universe? No, I'm kidding. I knew that wasn't the case when, again, we got waxed at 94 down there in Happy Valley. That's a great question. I think not necessarily that it's changed me so much as though it's expanded my philosophy and viewpoint.
Right.
You know, I used to be a pro-set guy. I love the pro-set. I still think in a lot of ways it's the best offense to run. That's why they use it so much in the NFL. But then seeing all the different offenses, you know, the way that teams approach the game allowed me to realize that, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And it's not just the pro set that fits every quarterback. And then also seeing that quarterbacks can make the jump from playing in a spread to going back to being under center and playing in the NFL. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then just getting to know coaches, right? Because a lot of times, you know, we see what's happening and we're wondering, well, why are coaches making some decisions? Now, why isn't this kid playing, or why haven't they changed their system to fit what they have? And then you get to talk to the coaches in person, and you get a better understanding of what they're working through. Because it's a tough profession. I mean, I think Coach Hazel, one of the best coaches in college football. And when it comes to dealing with kids, when it comes to implementing strategies, he's as good as anybody. But it just didn't work at Purdue. And he only won 9 games in his 4-year tenure. That's not good enough, and you lose a job. And so just knowing those coaches personally, knowing that now they've got to move their families to another location, just changes how I view them, you know, how I talk about them on air. You know, I'm always very cautious about being too critical because at the end of the day, nobody takes a loss harder for Penn State than Coach Franklin.
That's right.
And his players. And I think if you respect that, respect the process, how much time they spend, then you can treat them fairly on air when you're talking about them, but at the same time being critical of what's happening in their positions.
Interesting, you mentioned the pro set thing. You know, obviously, a lot of people have gone to RPO, and personnel-wise, I can completely understand why people have gone that way. There are, what, three primary pro set teams still left of the Big Ten, with Iowa, Michigan, and Wisconsin, obviously, right? And with their combined...
That's correct.
Yeah, 15 and 4 between them. Now, obviously, personnel makes a big difference. But is the fullback to you now becoming extinct in the game, and what does that mean for the game?
Well, I would say at this point you could say yes, but I would argue that football is a cycle and that we're
true.
Now going to see the fullback emerge again. And I'll say why. So what all these teams have gone to is they've gone to the tight end, right? Because
right.
he's a hybrid guy that you can block with him. He catches, he runs routes good. He's a big body. He's a physical guy. But the problem is when you're trying to run the ball in the red area or in short yardage and in between tackles, because that big body sometimes loses leverage. So these linebackers are still able to get under the tight end and then create the scrum and not allow a rush lane. Well, the big fullback always has he's always shorter. His leverage is great. His balance is good. And if you look at the NFL, right, you look at what Ezekiel Elliott is doing in Dallas, they still use a fullback.
Right.
You know, you look at Michigan State. You look at Michigan. You look at Wisconsin. How about Alabama? These teams, they use the fullback, and it's very effective in short yardage. And it also determines teams' toughness, I think. Now, Ohio State is the one that is a little unique in their spread format because they're still a power run team. Now, their lead blocker, 9 times out of 10, is the tailback, who, right. again, a different body type. If you think about Ezekiel Elliott now, he set the bar ridiculously high for everybody else. But Mike Weber, Curtis Samuel, even Carlos Hyde, right? They were lead blockers a lot of time for the quarterback who's running the football. So you tend to still get that lead running back along with those big tight ends. But I think as teams sort of get away from the spread, because now defenses are figuring it out, the defenses are smaller, faster, they're figuring out how to play man coverage and how to stop the spread, now you'll see the cycle come back to the power game, because the teams that are having the success at the top, they are power football teams. That's why Oregon can't get through a Final Four.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, they get beat up. You know, and if you look at Penn State, what they're able to do with the spread, they still have a power run game with Saquon Barkley.
That's right.
You have to be able to run in the red area. You have to be able to run on third and short. And a lot of teams lose games because they're in the shotgun on third and one, and that's a problem. So I expect that the fullback will begin to come back, because at the end of the day, this game has been around a long time. It's not that much new under the sun. And you have to go back to things that work once the new system is figured out. So everybody went to the run and shoot years ago, but then that sort of went away. We went back to power football. And then the spread came in. Yeah, that'll go away. Power football will always be a staple, and it will always come back.
And it always travels with you. I mean, power football, you know, if you take your running game, goes on the road with you. I mean, and
absolutely.
Yeah, people always don't talk about that part enough. So,
well, listen, if you look at some of the programs that have historically been known as B programs in big conferences, I think Michigan State is a perfect example. Northwestern is an example of it. It's a very simple recipe to be successful and win a lot of games, and that's play great defense and run the football. And that's all Michigan State has done for the last 8 years of Coach D'Antonio. Their challenge this year is they put so many guys into the NFL that they can't run it as well. You know, two All-American linemen are gone last year, so you're not running the ball effectively as well. Your defense isn't there. But D'Antonio will get the pieces right. He'll fix it out somehow, whether it's this year or next year, and he'll play great defense, and he'll run the football. He'll be in 90% of his games, and he'll put teams on the ropes at the end, and he'll win Big Ten championships again.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Stanley. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, I love it. Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Stanley Jackson, BTN. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The broadcast just seems so fresh, doesn't it? Heartland Championships. Speaking of which, we'll have Mike and the gang on tomorrow to preview... week 9?
Yes, sir.
Week 9 of the high school football season. Wow. Man, I can't believe it. Already week 9. Jeez. Seems like we just started this thing in August. Yeah, we did. All right.
So we say it's at week 1, it's a sprint.
Yeah. No, it's... We'll have Mike on tomorrow. We'll preview Sealands Grove. We'll preview Milton. We'll preview Lewisburg tomorrow. We'll look forward to that. Also, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We will talk about the subject that made Kevin very, it drove him to being a suit. The business of sports.
And his first day back in the building tomorrow. How appropriate when you get Tony on, too.
Well, don't think I didn't have my ear to the ground. See, what Tony has done is he's taken away all of the birds and butterflies. Oh, this is great. Sports. What do you mean it's about money? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's all about cash. It's a big business. Across the board, it's big business. And that destroyed his thought process of what sports is. There's no purity in sports now in his eyes. Your guy, Ben, 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, you're circling a fogged-in airport right now.
Tough sledding. That's an understatement, for sure.
You could trade for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Hmm.
Available. Available. Tony Romo. His chance.
That's true. They pull the trigger on the Fitzpatrick trade. That'll move Christian up on the depth chart.
Oh, it will, but it's not going to matter.
All right.
But Ryan Fitzpatrick, professional quarterback, wearing a Steeler jersey, wearing 14, bringing back all that Neil O'Donnell feeling.
Oh, yeah. Better bringing back the Neil O'Donnell feeling than Cliff Stout.
How about Tommy Maddox?
Yeah.
Bobby Lane.
Yeah.
Bill Nelson. Kent Nix. Jefferson Street, Joe Gillum. Maybe Terry Hanratty could throw a few for you.
If there's a little bit of Bubby Brister in him.
Some of these names I actually have stories about. From a well-placed source. That sometimes what's said at the dinner table on the road stays at the dinner table on the road.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.